This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit imnct.com for more information. Hey everybody, it is Lon Seidman. We are back with Behind the Video. This is episode number 55, and joining me as always is my lovely and talented co-host Tim Street from Los Angeles, California. How are you doing, Tim?
Hey Lon, doing well. It's hot here. Is it hot there?
It is hot, and my air conditioning at home on my second floor is dead, so that's why I'm in my conference room at my office right now.
I like that. Is that why they call it a boardroom? Because there's a big board hung behind you?
Yes, there's a big board. Actually, this opens up to even more boards. It's got two cork boards and a projection screen. But yes, it is hot. The mosquitoes are out. It is just nasty. So, but thankfully, we are safe and sound and secure here. We might have a guest today, Brian Rota. If he can join us, he will join us midstream, and we're also changing our show format around a little bit, and it also means that our show notes are differently formatted. So if we stumble, it's all my fault. So we'll take it.
I'll take responsibility as well. I don't mind.
Okay. So today on the show, though, our web series of the week is going to be Squaresville, and Tim is going to talk about that as we get later through the news. So stick around for that. And Tim, there's something big coming up. VidCon. Talk to us about.
Yeah, absolutely. VidCon's coming up, and For those of you that don't know about VidCon, be sure to go to VidCon. It's VidCon.com and check it out. If you've never heard of this, it is a conference for fans of web series. And it's kind of like the only thing I can relate it to is all that the stock footage and documentary footage that you've seen of the Beatles where the fans are cheering. It's kind of like that. Because you go to the hotel and I, Justine, will walk in and all of a sudden all these fans start screaming, or Shane Dawson walks in and it's just a mob scene of screaming teenagers. Amazing. But in addition to all the fans, they also have an industry track, and it's kind of cool. So there's a lot of things that if you get a chance to go and be part of Industry Day, you should definitely take advantage of it. It takes place in Anaheim. It's around the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of August. You're going to have panels like building and keeping your audience in a crowded field, deconstructing the contract. What are the things that you need to know as an independent content creator about contracts? And then beyond CPM, what other ways can you make money besides the YouTube CPM? And then other stuff like customer service, dealing with ad agencies, and then is digital really the great equalizer? So a lot of fantastic topics, a lot of great people. It's definitely a who's who of web video. Not only are the actual on-camera talent people mm-hmm. going to be there, but folks in the digital executive level, folks like Revision 3 will be there. Big Frame, YouTube will have folks there, Alloy Digital. It's just ground zero for the YouTube generation. And it's a pretty cool thing.
It looks really cool. It looks like they have a wait list, Tim. So I guess if you want to go, get on the wait list and maybe somebody will cancel.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow. Well, that seems like, I think we talked about this last year, and I remember you coming back. You were just totally shocked by like how some of these YouTubers who probably could walk down the street unrecognized are like the biggest stars ever when they walk through the door at VidCon. So that is cool. Well, check it out. Looks like there's a lot of neat stuff going on there. 31 days from now in Anaheim. So you don't have to go that far, Tim, right? Just a drive down the freeway.
Yeah, but I'm very tempted to get a hotel room just so I don't have to drive 30 minutes it'll be an hour and 30 minutes in the morning and then, 30 minutes at night.
Right. It is a bit of a commute there. So plus the traffic and everything else. So,
yeah.
Well, cool. Well, check out VidCon and we'll definitely be talking more about it as we get close. So now we're going to bring up our charts. And now what we're going to do, Tim, is start with YouTube first, because it actually is a little bit more interesting these days than broadcast and cable is. So we've been looking at the top five channels on TubeFilter, and what they've been doing is looking at the movers and the shakers based on total views per week by channel. And that one seems a little bit more interesting because it is creator-focused. So this
number
week...
Number five?
Number five is Arab Idol. So, you know, it's the Arab version of American Idol. Fascinating, right, that it's up as high as it is. But a lot of viewers on that. Psy, our friend, is still number four. The new one this week is Miley Cyrus in at number three, and that's her Vivo channel. I guess her self-destruction or whatever is getting some attention. And Tim, do people fabricate this? I mean, you know, she's now, like, you know, cut her hair short. She's, like, engaged and, you know, there's all this stuff. I mean, it seems like there's, like, this script that if you're a teen star and you start off as Hannah Montana, you've got to, like, you know, become – you've got to fall from grace and then build yourself back up, right? Is this manufactured?
I wonder, you know, who manufactures it and who's real, who's legit, who's the legit failure.
Yeah.
But it is interesting how it does seem to, you know, there's several of them out there right now that seem to be on that same path. But, you know, also growing up under the spotlight and being in a situation like that where you have to do not only what your parents tell you, but what the studio or the network tells you to do. That can be a little bit daunting and being robbed of your childhood. So, you know, especially if you've had to be a goody two-shoes, I would imagine at some point you do want to lash out. You do want to rebel. And unfortunately, your parents aren't the only people that see it because it plays out in the press and it sells a lot of papers. But, yeah.
I mean, it's really crazy.
How come Ron Howard never went through that?
Huh? Or like Taylor Swift or something. Well, I guess, you know, maybe it's just, you know, what you got to do. Maybe sometimes if the Disney Channel thing, you've got to shed it and move to the next stage or something. But, I mean, she looks nuts. I just don't get it. But, hey, you know what? As long as it's not my daughter, I don't care. Muyap, number two, and that's the Turkish music channel again. And really, it's interesting, you know, the Middle East and Turkey. I mean, it seems like there's a huge growing market for people watching video online. Tim, do you think maybe it's just the fact that their cable television is so restricted, or their satellite TV is so restricted, that this is this offers more variety in what they have in their home countries?
Well, I think also that there are people around the world that want to see that show that don't have access to it because they're not in Turkey. Mm-hmm. And so YouTube allows them to get a hold of that signal, you know, whatever that programming is that they want to get their hands on. And then once it starts building momentum, it gets featured on YouTube, and then out of curiosity, people click on it to see what it is, and that counts as more views. So I do feel that there are some false positives, so to speak, in this top five list, because some of it may not be that people really intended to watch it. They just click on it out of curiosity to see what it is, but it gets a view anyway.
Right, right. That's very true. That could definitely grow there. Number one, again, is this guy from Sweden, PewDiePie, who just does video games. And again, it's just, I just don't get it, but I'm going to keep doing video game reviews now because it's getting me a lot of views too. So a lot of gamers on YouTube. It's almost as big as Twitch, I guess, at this point. So
have you ever played Red Dead Redemption?
I have heard of Red Dead Redemption, but never played it.
It's a Western. I haven't played it yet, but I do enjoy watching other people play it. It's like watching an old cowboy movie.
Right, so there's some entertainment value. And yeah, maybe that's what it is too. Maybe some of us older folks who just aren't as good at these games anymore, it's like a way to live the story without having to do the interaction.
It's like watching a basketball game. I'm not going to be slam dunking anymore, but I love watching it, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's... it's got to be it. But I'll tell you what, I've been doing these Ouya reviews, and I'm still getting traffic from them. In fact, I had a couple of days where I was bringing in $15-$20 a day here just through RevShare. So good stuff. I'm very excited about it, so I'll keep doing it. All right, so let's move on to some news here. Vancouver-based Broadband TV has just got some money, Tim, and I guess it looks like they're getting some venture capital with some group there. This is according to TubeFilter, and it looks like these YouTube channels aren't going away. But you know, it's interesting looking at this, and $36 million, by the way, this channel received. You know, it seems like there's still money getting poured into these YouTube channels. Do they have plans to like put them on other platforms too, Tim? Like, what's the? Because you know, we had that thing with Jason Calacanis where he's
sure.
Like, "Look, we need more alternatives." What do you think?
Well, I think everybody, it's early days right now, and they're going to where the money is. You know, it's the gold rush, and in a lot of ways, YouTube is the train track that is getting everybody out to the gold to go find the gold, and some people are finding it, but, you know, how do they turn the gold dust into money that they can actually use? And these multi-channel networks are kind of cropping up as ways to do that, but I still don't know if they're going to be able to repackage these videos, because it takes a lot of time and money. It looks like Brian Rada might be able to join us now, so I'm going to see if I can copy and paste what you sent me here, Lon. Stand by just a second, because sure. I'm not talented enough to do this quite. Yeah. There we go. I have sent it to him, so hopefully he'll be able to join us. And Brian Rada is a web series consultant, and he works with a lot of different web series to help them monetize their web series. So it'll be interesting to get his take on all of this as well.
Mm. Absolutely. So we'll keep going while we wait for him. Or,
yeah, let's keep going.
All right. Yep. So related to this now, Intel is now coming up with its own IPTV service, and they've never really gotten into the service area before, but they've got some set-top box they're making that's going to bypass the cable companies, and they see it as a potential battleground of over the future of television, according to broadcastengineering.com. And I mean, they could probably pull it off just because they can pretty much sell the hardware at cost if they want to, because they make most of the chips. So what do you think, Tim? Should cable companies be scared of this?
I think this is a really interesting one. It looks like Brian's just joining us. So, hey, Brian, how are you?
Good morning. How are you?
We are doing well. We've just been talking about multi-channel networks, and we mentioned that you are a web series consultant. Maybe if you could tell the folks that are listening a little bit about what it is that you do.
Well, I help create online communities for script. Mainly, my main line of business is for scripted web series, and I help develop strategies using social media and actually super syndication of content. So it's funny that you're talking about MCNs, because
who are some of the folks that you've worked with, just to give folks an idea?
I've worked with web series such as Squaresville, Husbands, versus Valerie, which is a really interesting web series out of Canada. I'm currently working with Steve Silverman's The Inn. I've also worked with such notable web series as Skyrim Parodies, Stockholm. And I've done about, about 30 to 40 other private consultations for, other scripted web series who don't want to work with me on a monthly retainer basis.
One of the things we were talking about, Brian, Lon, who's also on the show and hosting, Lon mentioned that the MCMs are looking for other ways to monetize. Have you seen anyone doing international distribution other than maybe Vugaroo?
No.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a challenge for folks to figure out how to repackage short form content into longer form that can be syndicated internationally.
And that's the real trick. It seems like YouTube just has control over everything now, right? I mean, there's just no other place to put it. I mean, there are places to put it, but you're not going to get the viewership, right, Brian?
Say that one more time.
So the as far as distribution goes, YouTube seems to just have the control over pretty much bulk of the viewership on web video, especially for series and channels and that kind of thing. I mean, do you see other emerging places that you might have a chance of getting some viewership from, or is YouTube it right now?
I heard there's a new place out there called Resolution, like Resolution Studios. Who may have gotten a couple $100 million for funding, but I don't know if they're exclusively for web video. All of these, I have to tell you, I still think this space is still very up and down. I heard a very interesting thing just even 3 days ago about an MCN that I thought as recent as 3 months ago was doing excellent, and now is sort of, a few advertisers didn't come through, and now they're hurting. So growth is slowed. So it's just, I think it's just real hit or miss. But I think there's you know, I think there's two ways to skin the cat, to answer your question, Lon. I think, you know, you can try to upload to YouTube, go with an end. But, I mean, if you're going to upload to YouTube, yes, try to galvanize a fan base with an MCN. Otherwise, I think you can hold it back and try to pitch it to, like, a Netflix or a Hulu or a Vugaroo.
Right, something
or possibly Intel that we were just talking about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Intel's got a new box they're coming out with, and their plan is to offer the box and the service through through the internet, bypassing the cable companies. So it seems like there's this huge battleground forming, and I think it's a matter of who wants to take the first step against the cable companies and see where they can end up with it. And that appears to be what maybe the next year will hold, and perhaps this might make the industry a little bit more stable when they come into play. Brian, let me ask you one other question. I'm curious, you know, are there things that you see creators doing wrong all the time consistently? You know, what's like the one thing that you see the biggest mistake that people make?
Honestly, not budgeting for PR and marketing. there's two big mistakes people make. In fact, I had a great meeting on Friday with a new client, and I said, you know, he created a 30-minute pilot, and I said, this is great, and if you want to launch this digitally, it's just going to look and smell like a 30-minute sitcom pilot, and there's something about it that is missing. There's nothing wrong with it, but if you just uploaded this, if you cut it up into three episodes and uploaded it, it's still going to smell like a TV sitcom pilot. So people really still don't get like the, and I go back to, actually, I reference what Tim Street has said numerous times about super serving your niche. You need to create content that super serves a niche community. And then also Barrett Gresi, who's another like forefounder of this movement, where don't create TV light. So that's sort of one, from the actual content itself perspective, that's one answer is just, you know, super serve a niche and don't create TV light, because this is a separate sandbox with a separate set of rules, a separate set of best practices, and things that work and don't work. So it's a mistake to go and create television and put it online, because that's what we already have. That we already have a thing for that. It's called TV. You know, we already have a medium and a box for that.
What about Hulu? What do you think about Hulu and Roku with shows like House of Cards? I mean, obviously they spent a lot of money to do that, but that's TV, right? It's TV on the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, is it just a different category from what independent content creators can do, and should we just forget about it for now?
Well, I just think that, yeah, it's sort of an outlier, but I also would say that, you know, the whole joy of working in online video is it's interactive, you know, and there's something about having a mouse and a keyboard in front of something that you're watching that makes it a completely separate experience. So you need to honor that experience. And for the independent content creator who doesn't have the big budgets like a House of Cards, you have to use what you have to the best of your ability, especially if you're going to go the YouTube route. So there's that. The second answer I would say is definitely creating a PR and marketing budget. That's the second biggest mistake, besides creating, you know, TV light content and not really making it interactive and making it fit to the way that the internet video world sort of works. Besides that, I see a lot of content creators not budgeting for PR and marketing, or sitting down and actually having a 2 to 3 month plan or a 6 month plan for, you know, for social media and PR and, you know, getting out there in a bigger way. They just think, I still see a lot of people thinking, okay, well, oh, I didn't think about I think content creators think to a certain point. They think to shooting, getting it done, and getting it in the can, and that's it.
Right. The viewers will just come from like manna from heaven, right? They'll rain down on your series, and that doesn't happen, does it?
No, it doesn't.
What kind of budgeting are we talking about? I mean, are we talking about thousands of dollars? Is it effort? Is it buying views through, you know, some of the pre-roll stuff? What do you recommend people do? And I'm, of course, knowing that we would encourage people to hire you to do those, to get those questions answered. But generally, what would you say would be the?
Yeah, I mean, there's a combination of things that work. I think you should, if you're going to do it yourself independently, you know, you should budget between, you know, even just for ad buys or, you know, certain things, or even buying a press release. You know, you can do some of this stuff yourself by going to websites like freepressrelease.com. You can upload a press release there, but you can do it for $1 or $30 or $250, depending upon what communities you want to target and market to. So they have different levels of purchasing but there is a fee attached. So it's free. They have a freemium model, but if you want to do a real press release to actually have maybe outlets pick it up or maybe somebody see it, you know, you can pay for that. So, you know, I think it runs the gamut between, you know, anywhere between, I would say, $750 a month to, you know, $2,000 or $3,000, depending upon if you want to do it all yourself or if you want to, you know, hire somebody like me, or a combination thereof. And if you're dealing with, you know, I just want to say $2,000 to $3,000 for a professional publicist is actually reasonable. It's very reasonable. So, you know, I know people who work mainly outside of digital video, and those retainers go anywhere between $4,000 to $8,000 or $10,000. Granted, they're working on TV shows or feature films or independent films that have a bigger following, but, you know, a $1,500 to $3,000 retainer, you know, is within the realm of possibility.
Cool. When you're working with folks that are in this bucket of they haven't planned for anything, if you were coming across somebody like that right now who's ready to put their video out, like they want to put it out this week and they might be listening right now, what would you tell them to think about before they post that video without any marketing plan?
That's a great question, Tim. Yeah, God. That is my daily existence. I don't understand why people are in such a rush. You know, people get in like...
Because they're going to be rich if they put it out.
I guess, but I just see it all the time. You're right. Yeah, like people will come to me and be like, well, yeah, we're just, it's going to go this way. We have one episode and... We're gonna be in production for others, and we're just gonna start putting it out. And it's like, why don't you wait a minute? Why don't you get 3 episodes in the can? Give yourself some lead time. Do you have a structure of when you're gonna release them? Do you, you know, it's like no. Like, well, I have one episode, maybe, or I have one episode, 2 other episodes written, or like. One episode, usually people have one episode, 1 or 2 in pre-production or in production, 2 or 3 written, and they're ready to go. And I'm like, maybe you want to wait till you have 3 in the can and then, you know, and then give yourself some breathing room. But even that, you know, it's people come to me at all stages of the game. You know, a lot of people find me after their first season and they go, ooh, I did this and I failed at it horribly. Please help me.
Who came to you and made it easy for you, and what did they have together?
You know what, I have to tell you, I was really impressed with, just recently, really impressed with these Versus Valerie guys, from Canada. I mean, they really understand the space, and They've done a lot of their own research, a lot of their own homework. They consistently had a structure for when to drop their episodes. I think 6 or 7 of them were in the can while the few were being completed. They're just about wrapping up their first season. They actually just got funding from the Canadian government for a second season.
Really? The government is paying for web series?
Yeah, they have. It's called the IPF, the Independent Production Fund.
Wow.
And they have a category for digital, I guess, or maybe it's just all in one. And I guess I just talked to him on Friday, and he said that they had 157 applicants that apply for this grant, and they only choose 14, and they made it. They made the cut. So they actually won the lottery the first time around, and now they won it again. So they really, I think because they know they're competing against other people for free, quote unquote, free money, they really know their stuff. And they're just everything from their website design to, their social media strategy to, you know, the actual content itself and how it's constructed, the length of the content, their actual production values. I mean, they're pretty hot. Like, it's,
we'll have to check it out. It's called Versus Valerie.
Versus Valerie. And they also, what's also why they were on it, I think what's really interesting is they built their audience really smartly by having their lead character. She was a vlogger. It was called Sexy Nerd Girl. I don't know if you ever saw that show, but it was quite popular on Blip. And for over a year and a half, they actually built the fan base with the vlog called Sexy Nerd Girl, and then they transitioned it into a scripted show called Versus Valerie.
Well, that's interesting. So in other words, it was one of those things where they budgeted properly, in that they did the low budget production first to build the fan base, and then brought those viewers to something else.
That's exactly right.
I guess really what it comes down to is that creators often don't think about the business side of the business, right? I mean, is that...
Well, I always tell people, look, like, people have to be honest with themselves about their intention. You know, do you just want to, you know, is this a showpiece for you as an actor, writer, director, producer to build your brand and get industry recognition and have something to talk about with people in the industry and to start a conversation to build your brand? Or are you really trying to go and create a sustainable show that come hell or high water, you're going to, you know, really build an organic, authentic audience over a 2 or 3 year period and really look long term at a, you know, 3 to 4 year season? So for some people, they just want to shoot a web series and go and play with their friends because they want industry recognition. And if that's the case, then by all means, go do that. There are still best practices you can employ to make that worth doing. But I think that, you know, you just have to be honest with yourself. And this is a great medium to get started in. There is a very low barrier of entry. So, but I think people aren't, the biggest thing that I think I would just offer advice to people is, what do you want? And that's the biggest question in life, right? What do you want? Right. What is your intention? What do you want to create?
And what's best thing that could happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the best thing that could happen? And people have to think about that in terms of, oh, I just want to get a better agent. Okay, well, if you want a better agent and go and creating this show out of that, and that would make you happy, that would fulfill you, then great. Then let's look at creating a piece that highlights you as an actor or as a director and, you know, is going to be really tight. You know, you only need 4 to 5 episodes. You know, don't spend, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars, spend what, you know, make it, just get the right camera and just go from there, you know, and that would be enough probably if your writing's good and the piece is good to make it work. But, you know, it just depends, you know, people have to just be honest with what they really want.
And one last question before we go on to some of our other news items here. The demographic of YouTube seems to trend very young, which is no surprise. So, you know, Downton Abbey works on PBS because the audience is there. What should people think about? You know, maybe some younger people want to create something that's a very, you know, mature, not mature in an adult entertainment way, but mature in a story way that may not be compatible with the audience. What are you seeing out there? Like, how could I, you know, is Netflix or something a better avenue for some of those shows? And what do you recommend people do so they don't fall flat?
Well, I look at a show like Squaresville that I think is really... I just think Matt Enlow, besides being a very good friend of mine, and you know, client, it's like he is so smart. I mean, he created at least two other shows, depending upon if you talk to him, maybe three, for the web before he created Squaresville. And he was very specific in creating that show because it's about these two high school girls who, you know, and their friendship. It's sort of, I don't know if you saw this movie called Ghost World, like 8 or 10 years ago with, maybe even more than that, with Christina Ricci and Scarlett Johansson. It was a really cool flick, but that's what Matt sort of got some of his inspiration from, that and probably Freaks and Geeks, to create Squaresville. And, you know, YouTube's main demographic is 11 to 17. It is, that's really the target audience of YouTube. It's 11 to 17 years old. So I think Squaresville is really successful because of that. So Matt went and so he created a show. I think he really knew that. He knew that what the target demographic was. And so it wasn't like he wasn't being dishonest to himself as an artist, because I think there's so much of Matt in Squaresville, 100%. But I also think he knew, okay, if I'm going to go and create my third show for the web with no stars attached, and, you know, he wasn't necessarily he is not a name brand in himself, let me go and create something that's going to be successful with the biggest demographic that's online. And I think, you know, there came, you know, there came the idea for this show that, like, really, as Tim would say, super served his niche audience. So, you know, I think there's real value in, you know, if you're going to create something online, really think about who you're serving. Does that answer your question, Lon?
Yeah, it does, because, you know, we've been talking a lot about, and just in my own experience, you know, as a hobby, I do product reviews on my channel, and the video game console stuff seems to do the best, and it's been mind-boggling. You know, a lot of my stuff is search-driven, so, you know, people are searching for a product or whatever, and that's fine, but the stuff that gets the most interaction and subscribers for me is when I review a video game console, and I think there's some value to it in that, you know, a lot of these kids are really thinking about how to spend their money. So they're going to meet the old guy who has the money to buy this stuff to give them an idea as to whether or not this is worth, you know, an investment. And it's been interesting to see how it's directed me. And I'm curious how it might go in other places. And this is a great segue, actually, because our web series of the week is Squaresville. So, Tim, do you want to take it away and Brian can fill in where any things that he's learned along the way with the show, too?
Yeah, for sure. Squaresville. So Matt, he wrote the show, created the show, and then he took it into the IWTV's writers group and kind of workshopped it there and did his pitch there as well, kind of throwing out different ideas on how he was going to launch the show, and got feedback from folks in the industry, and then went out and won not two, but I think three different IWTV awards, as well as I think he picked up or was nominated for Streamy, I'm trying to remember. But he's done really well with this show, and it's really of the community, by the community, and it is that Freaks and Geeks. So if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's done on a you know, fairly low budget, but it's very smart, very quirky, and really targeted at the young audience. And it reminds me a lot of Square Pegs that I grew up with Sarah Jessica Parker, and Freaks and Geeks as well. maybe Brian, you could give us some insight as to, you know, he's into season, or he's already rolled out season two now, and he did a Kickstarter campaign to get the show going in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they raised about $12,000 for the first season of their Kickstarter, and that was really just organic friends and family, you know, and word getting out. He really works with his, one of the things that Matt does really well is creating community with his cast and crew. So he really uses his actresses to get the word out. And I think they were social media savvy to begin with, but, you know, I think they've upped their game certainly, and probably through some of the coaching he's giving them. And so they're great ambassadors of the show. He also has, you know, worked with some of his super fans to help get the word out on Tumblr. He uses Tumblr very well. And then because of the success of the first season, they actually were picked up in the first season by the MCN Big Frame. And they actually were funded for their second season by Big Frame, just so that's clear. In the first season, there was a Kickstarter, and the amount shall remain nameless of for how much they got paid for their second season. But Big Frame did fund and came through with the funds for their second season of their show. So that was a huge... Go ahead.
Now, one of the things that I had heard was that the way Matt started his relationship with Big Frame was that he happened to be on a panel with Sarah Pena, who runs Big Frame, and that's where they met. So I just wanted to throw that out to a lot of people, the value in getting out there and speaking and going to events, because those are where you're going to make the relationships that are going to pay off.
Tim, I can't agree with you more. That's exactly right. And I would say that's another mistake. You know, if there's three mistakes people make, the first one being the content, the type of content, it's not TV light. Three, not budgeting for PR and marketing. The third mistake is people just stay, they're hermits, and they stay in their houses, and they don't leave. And there's real value in real-world connections. I always say that, you know, social media and online interactions have, you know, sped up communication, but relationships take time. And that you can never beat the real face-to-face value of meeting somebody. I mean, Lon, you and I haven't met in the real world, but I get a sense of your energy over this video right now about kind of guy that you are, and, you know, and I can check out your website to learn more about you. But there's really nothing that can replace the, you know, the real world, you know, meeting somebody face-to-face. It's just that extra layer of trust is built and actual authenticity and really getting to know someone. So I would echo what Tim said that, you know, that's the biggest another big mistake I see content creators making. They spend all their time making their show and living in their houses and editing, and they don't spend the time once or twice a month to go to a networking event or create community in the real world where they're at.
So it's
that's one thing I will say also, just to put a button on that Matt Enlow is really good at. Matt Enlow is a master at that. He's been on the scene. He goes out and meets people, and he's very successful because of it.
And I guess if you're not good at that, you should probably find somebody who can do that for you, right? I mean, that's part of the game here is being able to get. It comes back to what you said at the beginning was marketing your product.
Exactly.
And if you're not a marketer, if you're a creator, then you got to find a marketer, right?
Exactly, and that's literally one of the biggest values I also offer to my clients. Is I will, you know, be their tour guide through events like that and make sure that they're at the right events or walking up and talking to the right people at those events. And, you know, they're literally networking and meeting people who they need to meet for possible future collaborations or even current, you know, current press opportunities.
And before we finish up here, let me give a plug for Brian as well. Brian is at all the events and knows all the people and is really good at connecting folks. So if you are in the market for a consultant, please follow Brian on Twitter.
Yes. You can follow me at Rada Consulting or my personal handle, which is at Brian Rada.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming on the show. I wish we had more time because it's something we could probably do a whole podcast just on this advice. But I think it's probably, you know, as a consultant, it's good to have some of this stuff available for service-related activities. But before we wrap up, we've got a great little app that I've been using off and on for a little while, and I may start using it again. It's called Boinks TV. We do an app of the week here, Brian, just to kind of fill our creator friends in on some of the tools that we play around with. And Boinks is like it's for the Mac only, unfortunately, if you're not a Mac person, but it's like a multi-layer video editing video editing suite in real time, in that you can do a lot of real time digital video effects, things like, you know, chroma keying and a whole host of other things that you can do pretty much as you record, so you don't have to go back and forth and post too much. And it's kind of neat, and I'm actually going to start using it with some of my hardware, my Blackmagic hardware, to do things that the Blackmagic hardware can't do. And it's $50 on the App Store. It gives you one camera, which if you're using other equipment with it is a pretty good deal. And there's also a bigger version for $500 that you can get directly from the Boinks folks that gets rid of a lot of the restrictions and pretty much only is restricted by what your Mac can do in real time. So it's a pretty slick little app for people that are looking to add some enhanced effects to their videos. So definitely check that out. And that's going to probably do it for this week. And we apologize to our live viewers. We got a little bit of a late start today due to some air conditioning problems at my house. But I am nice and chilled here. And you can find me at lonseidman.com or lonseidman, LonSeidman, on Twitter. Tim, where can people find you?
You can get me on Twitter at OneTimStreet.
And Brian, we want you to plug again. So what's the best place to find you and what you do?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Rada Consulting. I'm actually going to be redoing my website this week, so probably check that out by Wednesday or Thursday. It should be good to go, and that's brianradaconsulting.com.
Perfect, and that's when this show, the recording of this show, gets up, so by the time you hear this, hopefully, you get a deadline now, Brian.
Okay. Awesome. Perfect.
Your site will be the new site will be up and running for you to take a look at, but it's some really, it's good if you really want to make this into a living, that you do it right, and doing it right requires some investment. So check out what Brian has to offer. That'll do it for this week of Behind the Video. We'll be back next Sunday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. Pacific, on our Google Plus community. BehindTheVideo.com is where you can find that. And that'll do it. We are a wrap. Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JasonPerrier. Behind the Video is a production of Ape Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.